Now then, are we ready to work a little bit at some more at James? Are you happy to do this? We're going to look at a verse. One verse in James. How many weeks have we been doing James? Can you remember? I can't remember. We've got as far as verse 12. And I thought it would be good to... Verse 12 is a bit of a catch-all verse that kind of gives a bit of a summary of where we've got to already. So I thought it'd be quite useful to look at James 1, verse 12. Here it is. We'll put it up for you. And you'll notice straight away why we read a few moments ago Matthew 5, Jesus' words, James' big brother. Quite a bit of James reflects the words of Jesus. It's kind of uncanny. It's almost like he might have heard Jesus saying some of this stuff. And he kind of remembers it and thinks, okay, I'll get that down. It's in the same format as what we call those Beatitudes of Jesus, or the beautiful attitudes of, that Jesus talks about, the blessed are. And we have here, James 1, verse 12, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. It's good, isn't it? And if you've been with us on the journey so far, we've looked at how to face tough times, how to be wise, looking to godly wisdom, how to be rich in the things that really matter, and big clue, it's not particularly money and things. We've got to look at all this stuff. Doesn't this sound as though it's a little bit like a summary of where we've got to almost, this one verse? But it's one of those beautiful verses, like so much that Jesus said, that you can just look at and find, it's like a diamond mine. You need to spend a bit of time and get your hard hat on and get down there and do some work at chipping it out, because there's beautiful things here to discover. There often is in God's word. It's why we love the Bible. It's why it's absolutely essential to us when we are going through life as it is. So when you hear that word blessed, I don't know what you think of. And one or two of the versions do have the word happy in there. Happy are those who persevere under trial because, and in Jesus' Beatitudes, happy are the poor in spirit. Happy is one of those difficult words to pin down sometimes, don't you think? But today we've called it how to be happy. And if you go out there on the streets or down the roads or even in your own house and you ask people, who wants to be happy? Isn't that, you know, I do. Don't we all want to be happy? Isn't that all what we're striving for and that a lot of us find very elusive? You know, it is like that bar of soap in the bath when you're trying to capture it. And, you know, I mean, we all know what that's like. It takes me hours to find it sometimes. Not that I have many baths these days. I have showers, I should say. I have showers rather than baths. But happiness is like that. That's happiness. And of course, life kind of knocks it out of you. You kind of think... You know, many people throughout the course of human history have tried to get to grips with being happy, and some have said, well, basically, you just need to be really stoical about things. You know, yeah, life is hard, life is rubbish a lot of the time, but just get on with it. That kind of chin-up attitude that you have. I mean, I'm not saying that's rubbish. You know, in most of the things that we come up with as human beings, there's quite a lot of goodness and truth and help and all the rest of it, but I really don't think that's all it is. You know, I don't think it's all. The other sort of end of the coin, or the other end of the spectrum, of course, is to be happy. You just say, ah, forget it. It's all random and rubbish, and, you know, it's hard work, so I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry, and I'm just going to kind of forget anyone else. I'm just going to make the best for me and my family, what we can do out of this. It's kind of a different way of looking at it. But we're all trying to find that means of being happy. Do you know, when I read Matthew 5, when I read James 1, verse 12, I think we're being told here it's possible to find that elusive happiness at the well of our soul, but it doesn't come in the way that everyone else thinks it does. Or even we sometimes, as Christian people, if we're Christians and we're following Jesus, we can fall into this trap too. We associate being blessed with a painless existence, where things are going as we think they should, with relationships in the right place, finances in order, jobs that are fulfilling and are fruitful. That's what it means to be blessed. Yeah, we may not call it the blessed life these days, but we perhaps talk about a fulfilled life or a contented life or a peaceful life or a satisfied life or a full life or something like that that everyone's searching for. And we kind of think it will be, you know, when everything is just perfect and calm and settled. But James is writing here, and we'll say it again, going to repeat some of the stuff in a way that we've done just to make it. He's writing to people who are scattered out. Their lives are not going as they'd hoped. They're experiencing persecution and oppression, not merely a trial, trials of various kinds, James talks about. And that includes all the stuff about life, plus the fact that being a Christian was pretty tough for them, because it probably meant their life was in danger. Because being a Christian in the first days of Christianity, it was not a safe thing to do. And James is saying it's possible to be happy. It's possible to count it all joy. It's possible to be blessed. But you're not going to find that in the normal things of life that we look to be happy. It's not how it works. Things are far from easy. They're complicated. They're confusing. And from the outside, we'd never look at these early Christians' life and saying they were having a blessed life. And interesting, of course, we've already seen this. James doesn't say that in order to get that happy, fulfilled, satisfied, blessed life, all the trials will be removed. They will be taken out of those difficulties and those problems. What he actually says is, no, you need to be steadfast in them. You need to persevere. You need to endure. Because God is still at work and God has promised something much greater than all of this. You see, there is no, let's say it straight. We need to say this, don't we, in a world where we're bombarded with this. There is no ultimate peace or joy or fulfillment or blessedness or happiness in sex or money or power or fame or degrees or gold medals or big houses or anything that money can buy or relationships with our spouses, with our children, with our families, with our friends. There is no ultimate blessed life, peaceful life in any of those things other than the relationship we were made for with God the Father through Jesus the Son, established by the Holy Spirit. It's not to say that those things are wrong. It's not wrong to have money. It's not wrong to own things. It's not wrong to be in good, healthy, wonderful relationships with people. No, we're not saying that these things are alternatively wrong things, but they will not bring happiness, blessedness. They will not bring the satisfaction that deep down human beings crave, because it's what we were made to experience. Now, I need to say that to myself, I need to say it to you, because we all believe that, or most people believe that. But we don't live like that. And then we get all kind of screwed up when we're not particularly blessed or happy people. The joy that Jesus brings is different. Wealth can do many things. It cannot buy peace of mind. Fame can do many things, but it cannot give us lasting joy. Power can do all sorts of things, but it cannot free us from guilt. Jesus's joy is there when our hearts are breaking, when the hard times comes, and we need a joy that is greater. So here in this verse, we've got three steps to blessedness, three steps to happiness, three steps to heaven, if you like. Oh, that sounds like a good song title, doesn't it? Three steps to heaven. And the first thing is this, summarizing what we've looked at, and if you've been with us, it's a nice recap. If you haven't, then it's about enduring trials, the one who perseveres under trial. And really, we looked at this before. The word under is absolutely vital here. Under. Not out of, not beyond, not after, not when it's all finished, but under. During. When you're going through it. The keeping going. The looking to Jesus. The trusting Him. The knowing that His wisdom is greater than our wisdom. The knowledge that this is fleeting and temporary and it will pass. All of that is vital. The word under, it's the idea of soldiers standing in position when the enemy mounts a fierce attack. And you don't flinch and you don't move and you don't crumble. When others cut and run, this person stands and fights. She doesn't give in to fear. He does not flinch when the battle gets hot. She does not look for a quick or easy way out. He stands and fights until the enemy storms the ramparts. And you don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't know what's going to happen, but you're there. And God works in that. Sometimes he does deliver us from trials. He does get us out of things. And you know, most of the time that happens, we don't even know about it. We don't even know about it. I don't think we will know about those things until we get to heaven. How many times God has intervened and prevented things from happening that could have happened that we would have had to deal with? We're just oblivious to it. But you see, God also works this other way, the way that we've spent a lot of time on. He protects us through the trials, under the trials. He gives us what we need if we look to him rather than trying to do it in our own strength. When we're going through the fiery furnace of affliction, so that when that is over, whenever it is over, and sometimes it's a lifelong thing, we emerge different people, stronger people. And look, I'm like you. I'm in the camp that says, I'd rather be spared from the trial, protected by God out of the trial. I'd rather have that than having to go through it and learn the lessons that way. That's perfectly normal. That's how we all feel. But we very rarely have the choice about these things. It's what happens to us. Bad things happen all the time. We have no way of avoiding them if we're going to live in this world, and there's no other world at the moment for us to live in. This one is being redeemed, but it's a long way from being reconciled and being what God intended. So we're all in one of three places. We're all just coming out of a really tough old time, or we're in the middle of a tough time, or we're about to have a tough time. That's generally how it works, isn't it? So the first step, three steps to heaven, in receiving a blessing from God, being a blessed person, knowing that we have a blessed life, having a happy life, is to endure them, to persist, to persevere when it would be easier to run away, when it would be easier to cower, when it would be easier to crumble. That's the first step. The second step, having stood the test. Well, this is an extension of what we've just said, because back in the early verses of James chapter 1, he talks about our trials as being a test of faith, because it's there we demonstrate to ourselves, to people around us, to other people, exactly who God is. And if we don't rely on ourselves but rely on him, people start to notice that there is something, there's a source of strength and a source of power here that is otherworldly, that is supernatural, that is different from any of the simple aphorisms or inspirational messages that we pass on to one another to help. And that's not wrong. I mean, they can be very encouraging. But this is something else again. It isn't just chin up, or it isn't just, you might as well give up. Life is nothing but a series of tests. Some we will pass, some we will fail. We might be tempted to throw it all in and run away. We might be tempted to turn to alcohol or give ourselves over to sensual pleasure. That's what happens to people very often. There's so much that we use in life to prop us up. Incidentally, there are lots of ways in which, as Christians, I think, we fall into those things just as easily. Now, I'm not for one moment suggesting that we're all raging alcoholics and taking drugs to numb our existential pain here. But some of the things that happen, we tend to use them in a minor way ourselves. Numbers of times that I have seen or been with Christians who use alcohol to medicate their problems. They may not be alcoholics, but they don't turn to Jesus, they turn to alcohol. And it's because that's an easy one, because it's socially acceptable. It's socially acceptable to do that. And it's a rite of passage, it's a normality. Of course, it's a good thing. It's good for me. We justify things in so many ways. There's so many ways that we should do that. Just one little example. Maybe we are overwhelmed. We can't imagine going on for another day. Maybe we have chronic pain always, which goes away. I know some of us are dealing with some of these kind of stuff. It might be physical. It might be mental anguish. It might be emotional anguish. And we have to live with it day by day. And we cannot see an answer to it. And we don't know the way out of it. Bearing up under these trials, it is a test. It's a test of whether we go for God's wisdom or whether we turn to our own wisdom or the wisdom of people around us. James wants us to know that when we stand firm in those hard times, there is a reward coming. That's step three. We will be approved by God. We will pass the test. We will gain the prize. But we have to understand that this is some kind of test. Think about my guitar for a minute. Is my guitar Gilbert? Gilbert. Everybody say hello, Gilbert. Some people can make beautiful music with a guitar like this. I'm not one of them, but you know, some of those wonderful musicians, classical musicians with the guitar, or rock musicians, whatever your style, and they can make this instrument sing. People like Chris. Don't shake your head, Chris. You're very... But you see, in order to play a stringed instrument like this, you have to have strings under tension to make a nice sound. I'm going to have to play it in a minute, so I'm not going to do it. But if I, what would happen? You know, even if you're not a musician, you know that if I actually let all those strings go weak and wobbly, it'd be horrible, wouldn't it? They'd go, there'd be no music. It's only because they're tightened under that particular tension that we can hear such wonderful, beautiful music. A limp string is pretty hopeless in that respect. And it's the same with you and me. Somehow, I don't know why, and I don't know how, and I will say to God, couldn't you have done this differently? And I think he will say, I did, but you messed it up. It was a lovely world, but unfortunately, you decided you could do it better. I think that's his answer, to be honest, theologically. But we work better. We learn more. We grow through the tension, through the stress, through the difficult moments. When we're relaxed and comfortable, like the strings that are going blah, 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 when the bills are paid, when the family's intact, everyone's talking to one another, all is well in our little corner of the world. Life is grand, but we don't make much music then. We even forget often to be thankful. I know you don't, but I do. We all want the music of heaven, but we don't want the pain. But they go together, and you can't have one without the other. It's how it is. Sorry. But it's how it is. But there's joy in this when we realize it and when we understand it. Three steps to heaven. The third step to heaven is that there is a crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. The blessed life, the happy life, the crown of life. Don't think king, queen with crown on head. Don't think that. Almost always when you read it, certainly in the New Testament, we're not talking that kind of crown. The crown that James has in mind, as Paul does when he writes about this elsewhere in the New Testament, it's the laurel wreath that maybe the emperor wears, but actually they're thinking very often of the original Olympic Games, where when you won, you had the laurel crown on your head. It was given to victorious athletes. Honor reserved for those who paid the price in the hard times so they could stand victorious at the end. Those who were prepared to go through, as any Olympic athlete has to, the training and the sacrifice and the getting up early and the doing this instead of doing other things that you have to do to be a successful Olympic athlete and the crown of life. We all want the music of heaven, but we don't want the pain. We don't want to go through those things that will give us what we so desire. And Winston Churchill, in May 1940, when he became Prime Minister, we forget now because he's a great hero of the nation, but many people thought he wasn't up to the job. As we'd struggled against the rise of Nazism in Germany, and in 1940, in his first speech to the House of Commons, he said this. He talked about the trials, the problems, and then he said, I have nothing to offer but blood, toils, tears, and sweat. And at this distance from all of that, we can look at that and say, rousing and inspiring. But he wasn't promising very much, was he? He was being honest. He was telling it like it is, and you need to do that. That's the first stage of actually getting anywhere. If you want the victory, if you want the blessed life, then you've got to be realistic about where you are and what's going to make a difference. And he was, in war terms, blood, toil, sweat and tears. And that's what we face, any of us, if we really want the crown of life. His ultimate goal, in the same speech, he said, you ask what is our aim? It is victory Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory however long and hard the road may be. No wonder he did the job. And no wonder people came to respect him and love him so much. Life is hard. The Christian life is hard. Christianity is not a message that says, you come to Jesus and recognize him as your Lord and Savior and everything will be fine. It will be different from everybody else. Unfortunately, there's an awful lot of that around, of prosperity teaching of all sorts, of all kinds. That somehow the blessing is you'll get lots of money, or you won't have any problems, or whatever. It's not true. Some Christians will have loads of money, some won't. Some will be very poor. Christians will be just like everybody else in life. Complete mix of people, of backgrounds and circumstances. The difference isn't in any of that. The difference in terms of being blessed is knowing that our crown of life, if you like, our blessed life, is with God through the Lord Jesus Christ, and that's the thing that matters and makes the difference. That gets us to heaven, not just heaven when we die, but heaven here on earth. Yes, the toil and the sweat and everything else, we know what that's like. It doesn't cease to be difficult. It doesn't cease to be a problem. We have to work all that through, but to know that God is in it with us, that as we go through it, he is even now giving us the crown of life. We begin to receive what we were looking for in the first place. You see, we shouldn't really be chasing after happiness. It doesn't come when you chase it through all of these things. It comes when we give ourselves to God completely and utterly through what Jesus has done. God intends for us to wear the victor's crown. He intends for us to stand on the victor's platform in the ceremony. But it won't come without toil and struggle and pain and loss. We often do this. We often sing about these things, don't we, as Christian people? And then we go out and kind of forget it all somehow in the difficulty of daily life. We need to bring this all together somehow. One of our favorite hymns, Amazing Grace. Through many dangers, toils, and snares I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. We love the song, and we want to be led home, and we love God's goodness and his grace and his mercy and all of that. The dangers, toils, and snares, well, not so much. But you don't have one without the other. If life were easy, we'd be tempted to think we don't need God. We don't need his grace. If the sky was always blue, we wouldn't cry out to God in desperation, help, what is this? Why is this happening? Hard times break us of our self-reliance. Some of us take a long time to get there. We're still relying on ourselves. We can say we trust Jesus and believe him, but we're really still doing it all in our own strength and our own thinking, our own understanding, and we're trying to deal with it. It takes a lot for someone like me to get to a point where I know my reliance has to be in God, on Jesus. I don't know why people like me need to be broken so much, but we do. Otherwise, we continue to try and rely on ourselves, and our weakness shows. I want a blessed life. I want to be happy, don't you? I want it for me. I want it for my family. I want it for all my loved ones. I want all of us here to know God's favor in all that we do. It means that this kind of life is possible for you, for me, for all of us. It's within the reach of all of us. The blessing that James talks about in verse 12. No one is left out. And we look to Jesus. Hebrews 12:2 says that Jesus saw the joy ahead of him. He saw the joy ahead of him. He endured death on the cross and ignored the disgrace it brought him. Same word in Hebrews. Don't know who wrote Hebrews, but it's the same word as James uses here for the one who perseveres under trial. Jesus, ignoring the shame, ignoring the ignominy of it all, and the pain that he went through, physical and mental anguish, all of that for the joy that was before him. We are not being asked to do anything that Jesus doesn't understand here and that Jesus doesn't know. It's why in the depths of our being, when everything has crashed around us, Jesus is not there as someone who's never been there saying, oh, you'll be okay. He's right in it with us saying, I've been through this. We'll walk through this together. Following Jesus always leads to the cross. We must set out on the Jesus road, knowing there's a cross somewhere up ahead. And if we endure these trials with grace, we find God's approval and we receive the crown of life. A couple of stories, just for those of you, and I know there will be people right now in the middle of something that, you know, you want it to go away and it won't go away. One day, you will understand what you're going through now in a way that you don't right at the moment. There aren't the answers that you seek and that you desire and maybe you feel you deserve, but the answers just aren't there and life isn't working in one respect or another. One day you will know. It may be a long time before you come to an understanding of what you're going through right now. There was a group of people who were being asked for their favorite Bible verse. Always a tricky thing because verses out of context, you know, you don't do that. It can get into awful trouble taking verses out of context. But the group were asked, especially when you're really discouraged, when life is difficult, what's your favorite Bible verse? Someone said, "The Lord's my shepherd, I shall not want." Psalm 23, verse 1. Nice verse. Someone said, "God is my refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble." Psalm 46, verse 1. And yet another person said, "In this world you shall have trouble, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world," said Jesus. John chapter 16. Then old Mr. John, who was 80-something years old, head of white hair, he stood up and he said, with as much strength as he could muster, it says, "And it came to pass," 85 times in the Bible. And people were a bit, you know, nervous and started to giggle a little bit about that, thinking that maybe his lack of memory had got the better of him. But he went on, he said, "At 30, I lost my job. And with four hungry mouths to feed and a wife to feed, I didn't know how I would make it through. At 40, my eldest son was killed overseas in the war. It knocked me down. At 50, my house burned to the ground. Nothing was saved out of the house. At 60, my wife of nearly 40 years got cancer. It slowly ate away at her. We cried together many a night on our knees in prayer. At 65, she died. I still miss her today. The agony I went through in each of these situations was unbelievable. I wondered, where was God? But every time I looked in the Bible, I saw one of those 85 verses that said, 'And it came to pass.' I felt that God was telling me my pain and my circumstances were also going to pass, and that God would get me through it. Whatever I am facing right now, it will pass. And I may not get to enjoy much of that in the present life, but I have a life that is eternal because of what Jesus has done. Isn't that fantastic? Isn't that great? Let me say, whatever you're facing this morning, I'm not going to minimize it, but I am saying that these people in James were facing persecution in a way perhaps that we shall never know. I don't know if you listen to Canon Andrew White, the vicar of Baghdad. Some of you will know him and will listen out for what he says. It's well worth listening. I was hearing him a while ago saying again that we have no idea in the West of the suffering of Christians in the Middle East, for instance, at the hand of ISIS, where Muslim terrorists have systematically burned churches and killed Christians in Syria and northern Iraq. One of the stories he told a few years ago now was about four Christian children in Iraq, children who were beheaded because they would not renounce Jesus. ISIS turned up. They said to the children, "You say the words that you will follow Muhammad." The children, all of whom were under 15, four of them, they said, "No, we love Yeshua. We love Jesus. We've always loved Yeshua. We have always followed Yeshua. Yeshua has always been with us." And the militant said, "You say the words." They said, "No, we can't." And Canon White says they chopped their heads off. How do you respond to that? Canon Andrew White says, you just cry. You just cry. I was reading this week of a story in India. "I will die, but I will not bow down to this idol," the courageous face of Kushal from India. I won't go into the story there, but there are plenty of stories coming out of of countries where it is difficult. It's not just India or the Middle East. It's Siberia and Tajikistan, Laos, Nigeria, China, Sudan, Albania, Kenya, Philippines, Indonesia, Vietnam, you name it. You see, sometimes it's not just, oh, life is really tough. It's you give up your life because you won't give up Jesus. But the crown of life is there for all of these people. It's there for us too when we get through it. Let me tell you one more story. I grew up with this. Some of you will know it because it comes from a book that was very current when I was much younger. Through Gates of Splendor. Does that ring a bell for anyone? Through Gates of Splendor. Jim Elliot? Jim Elliot, one or two nods. Story of a young American called Jim Elliot. In 1952, Jim went to Ecuador with a friend, Pete Fleming, and another friend, Elizabeth Howard, who moved to a nearby village of Quito, in Quito. Jim and Elizabeth were married out there in October 1953. They had a daughter in 1955. Together they worked on translating the New Testament into a language of the Quechua Indians. That's their heart. They wanted to share the good news of Jesus, the love of Jesus with people. Its greatest desire was to reach the Wyodoni tribe who lived deep in the jungles, who hadn't made much contact with the outside world. They were known to be fairly ferocious people. But Jim wanted to tell them about Jesus, so he started a plan. He called it Operation Orca. Besides Jim and his family, there were five more young families, four other young families, I think were five altogether. So there was Pete Fleming, Ed McCulley, Roger Yordaran, and the pilot, Nate Saint. They began to search the jungle by plane in hopes of finding a way to contact the tribe. They'd fly around camps or areas they thought they might be camped in. They would shout out words in the Orca language, words of welcome and friendship that they'd learnt. They dropped down gifts in baskets. And eventually they discovered a sandbar in the middle of the Kuraray River. And they knew they could use that as a landing strip for their little plane. And it was there they met the Wyodonis face to face. And on January the 8th, 1956, from their makeshift base on that sandbar, with a one-year-old child and a wife of 3 years, Jim and the others landed. They radioed their wives saying that they were going to the village. They radioed later that day. Operation Orca was underway. A group of orcas showed up at the sandbar and they radioed back again. Guys, the orcas are coming. We're actually going to meet them. The last radio contact was Jim calling Elizabeth and saying, "We'll call you back in 3 hours." And later Jim's body was found with the others, brutally pierced with spears and hacked to death with machetes. Jim was 28 years old. And the world said, what a waste. What a waste of a young life. But that's not the end of the story. After Jim's death, Elizabeth Elliot, with her daughter and another young lady called Rachel, went and lived among the Orca Indians and cared for them and taught them about Jesus. She offered something, not just a theoretical knowledge, but a practical demonstration of forgiveness and kindness and mercy. The grandson of Nate Saint, the pilot who was murdered with them, returned also to the tribe sometime afterwards, to the tribe that killed his grandfather, and he spent years and years of his life there. Not all that long ago, a party of university students, many of whom were not Christians, went on a trek through that part of Ecuador, and they were guided through the jungle by orca guides, and they stayed in orca villages. And they finally came to Nate Saint's grandson, who's still out there, and said, "Where are the orcas?" They thought they were still some kind of savage tribe. And they couldn't believe that the people guiding them and giving them hospitality and looking after them were once this fierce, suspicious people who had murdered five youngsters. And Nate Saint's grandson, introduced them to one old orca tribesman and said, "This man has become my grandfather." And those orca Indians innocently spoke to those young, non-believing Western university students and told them about the love of God and what God had done to the hatred in their lives and their abuse of women and children and how God had changed them and their villages. and their tribes. Was Jim Elliot's life a waste? His journal entry for October the 28th, 1949, a few years before he died, was this: if you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake, you will save it, says Jesus. And that, he then wrote his most famous quote of all. I grew up with this. He is no fool who gives up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. I'm inspired because these people were happy. Yes, Jeff, but they died. They got hacked to death. They were happy because they knew how to live a blessed life. They knew what was really important. They knew where their crown of life was coming from. Whether it's Jim and the others who died at a young age who received their reward in heaven, or whether it's Elizabeth and Nate's grandson and the others who went out there and demonstrated in the Ecuadorian jungle. No Rambo with napalm bombing the savages in revenge. But the love and forgiveness that are the Christian gospel, that are only found in God through Jesus, only the way to the blessed life. They spent their years overcoming, under trial, facing the test in a way that I don't think I ever will. And they inspire me to the blessed life. So, when life doesn't go your way, what is your response? Do you throw in the towel of faith and go your own way? Or do you persevere and trust in God's wisdom over your own? Do you have a longer view in mind than one that outlasts this world? Or do you think that God owes you something right now, right here? James is trying to remind us that biblical Christianity is marked by God's presence in the midst of challenges, and that people who continue to love God and trust him through it all and make sure that people know who they're giving their allegiance to despite their pains and problems, that's the blessed life. It's not found in a trial-less life, but often a trial-filled, God-saturated life where you learn to be shaped by the one who loves you, who's promised the crown of life. So today, friends, persevere. Do not give up. Remain steadfast. Stand the test. God is sovereign and lovingly at work for his glory and for your good. Believe it. Trust it. Even when you can't see it, he is faithful.